path that can be walked is not the eternal path. The name that can be named is not the eternal name. The nameless is the origin of heaven and earth. The named is the parent of the 10,000 things. Remain free from desires and you will see life's wonder. Become trapped in desire and you will only see the outcomes. Both of these develop together but have different names. They are part of the mystery. Mysterious and more mysterious. The gate to all that's wondrous. The words that we say in prayer are like rain on the surface of a pond. They remind us of a depth within the silence. We came in here each alone in one sense, lost in words, lost in habits. And now we ask that we could listen more deeply than the words themselves, to the silence between the words that we share. Not the isolated silence, but the shared silence of the being that unites us and holds us all. Help us now all to sink into that deep silence. Well, I know y'all don't believe in predestination, but there's something ironic about being here today, and I know Davidson didn't plan it, unless he's got a crystal ball. For the last 2.5 years, I've been on trial for the sin of treating people the way Jesus treated them, and ordaining gays and lesbians in the Presbyterian Church, and performing same-sex unions, and all those horrible, horrible things. And this community and your pastor have been incredible support during that time. So I think it's very fitting. Last Friday, we found out that I was acquitted. So. But it's definitely a mixed bag, because it's one thing to let the heterosexual off. It's something else to change the oppression. And that's what we didn't do. At the beginning of the trial, I asked, this second round, it's been two rounds so far. I said, if in your heart you think that what I'm doing is a sin, I want you to vote me out of the church. But if in your heart and conscience you believe that what I'm doing is really right, and the church just doesn't get that yet, I want you to say that. I want you to come out of the shadows and say that and be a Protestant and express your conscience. Well, sorry. I talked to one of the people, and they're very hurt that I wasn't happy with the verdict. And I am relieved personally. But you know, it's not Christ's church until all of God's children are welcome. So, and another irony is that I used to not be political at all. I mean, I used to, when I was in college, I was very, I guess you'd say, New Age in a sense. I mean, Edgar Cayce, anybody here Astral Project? Yeah. You know what I'm talking about. My religion, not to say yours was, if you just said yes to that, but it was very private. And when I didn't want to hear about politics. It was like being a cold shower on the buzz kind of a thing. And so I had heroes like Gandhi, but who I saw as a very nice guy, wore a diaper, you know, just really... nice guy. Didn't read him, but I really liked him. St. Francis, the bird on the shoulder thing. I liked that. And Helen Keller, you know, making the best of what she had. And the truth was, I didn't understand any of them. I didn't understand any of them until I started doing work at the Rape Crisis Center. And some feminists got a hold of me and started twisting me a little bit in love and helping me to understand that simply by claiming my white, male, heterosexual privilege, that I was standing on somebody's throat. And I didn't have to do that. The more powerful you are, the less violence it takes to do what you need to do. If you're strong enough, I mean, if you're weak, you have to go ahead and shoot the person. But if you're strong enough, you just have to build a wall between them and what they need. It can be a real wall, it can be a law. And what I realized was that I was a part of what had wounded these women that I was going to visit in the hospital. And I didn't want to be that. Well, unfortunately, I started hearing my heroes in a different way. Mahatma Gandhi, I started actually reading him. And he wasn't always as nice as I thought that he was going to be. Sometimes actually introduced stress and crises until people would look at what they're doing. This is Mahatma Gandhi. To see the universal and all-pervading spirit of truth face to face, one must be able to love the meanest creature as oneself. Whoever aspires after that cannot keep out of any field of life. Those who say that religion has nothing to do with politics do not know what religion means. Now that's not very nice, is it? But it's true. Helen Keller was a socialist anarchist who made people tremble with the power of her words. I didn't know that. And did you know that St. Francis, the reason he took the vow of poverty was not just so he would suffer, but because he had realized the link between wealth and violence? That if you amass wealth, then you need violence to protect it. Well, all of a sudden I had this very uncomfortable realization that all of these nice people that I'd patterned my life after were anarchists and socialists. The worst revelation came when I started hearing Jesus differently and realizing I had never understood the first thing. And I'd gone through seminary and done pretty well, but I had never understood the first thing. Maybe the first thing, but not the second thing. And I started, Presbyterians read this thing called the Bible. I'm kidding. Davidson's working over my congregation right now as we speak, so. My place is going to be in ashes, and I want him to come. How dare you invite him? But all of a sudden, I realized that little song that Mary sang, the Magnificat that we sing every Christmas, was a song of revolution. When it talked about bringing the mighty down from their thrones, lifting up the weak. That's revolution. That's realigning the economy. And when John the Baptist was baptizing people, he wasn't just putting water on their head. He was telling them to leave the empire, to surrender their role in the oppressive empire. Then when Jesus gave his first sermon, something I'd never seen before, and I may not see it again because I can't find it. There it is. First sermon, this is where he's going to say what his ministry is going to be about. The Spirit of God is upon me because God has anointed me to bring good news to the poor. God has sent me to proclaim the release of captives, recovery of sight to those who cannot see, to let the oppressed go free, and to proclaim the year of God's favor. It was the year of Jubilee, the year where slaves would be released. Debts, remember that? Forgive our debts as we forgive our debtors? Wasn't very nice either. There were real debts. This was real stuff. That's scary. I mean, religion isn't scary when it's all sort of, you know, in your head, and you come to church and there are the parameters and you know the brackets. The minister's only going to talk about things that don't really affect anything else. And you kind of count on that. You know, it may say a social kind of causing, but you know that he or she doesn't really mean it. Well, this is revolution. I started listening to people that weren't my heroes but became my heroes, like Eugene B. Debs. Does anybody remember Eugene B. Debs? Dirty socialist. Listen to these words, how spiritual they are. Years ago, I began to recognize my kinship with all living beings. I said then and I say now that while there is a lower class, I am in it. While there's a criminal element, I am of it. While there's a soul in prison, I am not free. You may have heard those words before, but I bet you haven't heard the second part of this. The martyred Christ of the working class, the inspired evangel of the downtrodden masses, the world's supreme revolutionary leader. The words, the government of the people, by the people, for the people, Lincoln didn't make that up. It was in his Bible, in the preface. Wycliffe, in the Bible, the preface, said this book is for a government of the people, by the people, for the people. And he said, the rich are devouring the poor. And the more I read the gospel, I realized that's correct. It's trying to help us understand that the rich are eating the poor, devouring the poor, sending miners down into dangerous situations so they can save some money. Scary stuff. Raises the question, well, why not then just become a social activist? Why not forget religion, the religion part, and just focus on changing the culture? I'm glad you asked me that. The philosopher Hegel had, I think, a very interesting understanding of religion. And he said it's sort of the deep architecture of how we put our whole world together. It's deeper than philosophy. He said, in a sense, it's philosophy in pictures. But he said something I think that's very interesting. He said, if you can find out what somebody's inner theology is, it will tell you what their government is, what it really is, when the trappings are taken off. So I started thinking about it. In America, Jesus is Lord. Now, Lord is a medieval white guy from Europe, right? Kind of a thug kind of figure. So what you would expect, if that's someone's theology, is that's the kind of leader that people would be attracted to. They might talk about democracy, but that's not really the kind of leader that's going to resonate deep inside, because what they're looking for is a medieval chieftain. Now, I don't know how that applies to our modern political scene. I can't think of any application of that. But perhaps you can. It's not a democracy if you don't get to vote on what really matters in your life. It's not really democracy if people put forward candidates. And let me just say, I know there's some good candidates in this congregation. I got some good people here. At the national level, however, when was the last time you were happy about who you voted for and felt that somebody represented your deep values? That's not democracy, is it? When the corporations give you, you want puppet A or puppet B? That's not good enough. I love Molly Ivan's kind of rebellious thing of saying, if the parties in Washington aren't going to give us real options, we'll make our own parties. That's the revolutionary spirit. That's what will save the country. When we stop thinking in medieval terms that there's some leader, some lord that's going to come from the outside and make things better. Because that'll never be a democracy, ever. When we call the president the commander in chief, that's a wartime title. A president presides over what? The democratic process. Democracy is destroyed by that kind of strong leadership. The three wise men, Christmas, it never hit me before. Every year something different pops up. But the three wise men were three people who were very religious, very spiritual, but they didn't want to deal with politics. They'd screen that stuff out. Just wanted to be nice, just wanted to be smart. So at Christmas time, they go to Herod. They know there's some political struggles, but they screen those out. Go to Herod and say, hey, I hear the Messiah's been born. They tipped off the fact that a revolutionary leader had been born, and then there was the slaughter of the innocents. Just because I don't want to be political does not mean that my actions do not have political consequences. Right? Politics is just how we treat each other. If we eliminate the religious part of it, the spiritual part of it, the deep part of it, we never touch people. And that's why the liberal leadership of this country might as well just be talking in a tin can. They're talking up here. They're talking rationally, which I like rational. I like that. And it would work, too, if we were personal computers, where you just program that top part. But we're not. We're mammals. We're animals. I loved the anthem about evolution. It strikes me as funny that the greatest proof of evolution is the people that are fighting against it. There's no more clear primate behavior than getting these little circle groups with the male leader and ooh, 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 ooh. Now that's the kind of leadership I like. But if people are afraid and making choices out of fear, what Christ said, what Gandhi said, what Buddha said, what Dorothy Day said, what they all said is you can't scare them more. The only way to save this country, to save this planet, is to be different. Not to be the mere image that's a stronger, nicer bully. But to think different, to feel different. Martin Luther King touched this country at a level that I don't think anybody else has. Because he put the two pieces together. He put the mind piece, the principle piece, and the heart piece together. He said words like, we have guided missiles and misguided human beings. And when you hear that, your heart says, yeah, I know what that is. When religion detaches from meaning and from nature and from life, it's like when a suburb cuts down all the trees and names the streets after them. You know what I'm talking about? You live on Redwood Street, but you've never seen a redwood before, Maple Street. That's what religion is like when you start getting literal about the symbol systems. Because it's supposed to be tuning us to something deeper and truer. It shows up everywhere. There's a survey done at the University of Connecticut. Listen to this. This is incredible. 34% of Americans polled said the First Amendment goes too far. Anybody want to put money down on democracy in that place? 46% there was too much freedom of the press. I guess they need to keep them in monkey cages or something. I don't know. 28% felt that newspapers should not be able to publish articles without prior approval of the government. 31% wanted public protest of a war to be outlawed during that war. And 50% thought the government should have the right to infringe on the religious freedom of, in quotes, certain religious groups in the name of the war on terror. And of course, everybody thought, okay, I know what religious group. But whether or not you believe this survey, just go to the market today, the grocery store, and go to the book section and look what America is reading. Take the little throw-up bag with you. It's not just a political problem, it's a spiritual problem of people who don't know who they are in the universe and they don't know what a human being is. That is the evangelism that will save the world. Not to join the Presbyterian Church, the Unitarian Church, or any church, but to join the human race. That's what these people were talking about. Coming to reality. To have a generation of children that stop saying pledges to flags and inanimate objects and start saying pledges to the earth and to the animals and the people who live on it. If you look around America, there are people who've lost hope. That's where you come in. That's where I come in. That's our calling now. When Jesus said, I've come to preach good news to the poor, release of captives, sight to the blind, that's us. It's not talking about people with a seeing disability. It's talking about people who can't open their hearts. It's a wonderful way to live. And you stop thinking about whether you win or you lose. Because you realize at some deep level that it's better to lose in a great cause than to succeed in an ignoble one. Jesus is calling us. Buddha is calling us. Gandhi is calling us. The call comes from everywhere. But it's one call that you hear within your own heart. I want to close today. With words by the theologian Reinhold Niebuhr in his book, The Irony of American History. Nothing that is worth doing can be achieved in our lifetime. Therefore, we must be saved by hope. Nothing which is true or beautiful or good makes complete sense in any immediate context of history. Therefore, we must be saved by faith. Nothing we do, however virtuous, could ever be accomplished alone. Therefore, we are saved by love. Thank you very much for your kind attention, and it's always wonderful to be with you. Thank you.